Hello, beloved community. Welcome to the January 19th, 2026 episode of Out on the Edge, where your co-hosts, Judy McCord, Robin Hamilton, and me, Betty Priyu, meet with wonderful guests to discuss topics relevant to being gay and gray in North Carolina and beyond. Our guest today is Betsy Borton, Director of Special Projects at Transitions Life Care. Transitions Life Care is a local organization dedicated to caring for individuals and families navigating the end of life or life-changing illness, hospice care, and more. Betsy is a longtime community activist, passionate about educating people and vulnerable populations about a variety of taboo health topics. So, Betsy, thank you for joining us today. I have a few more things to say before we kick in. So, but thanks. We appreciate you being here.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. Okay, so the credits today. Our show is brought to you by the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging. We broadcast every Monday afternoon, 3 to 4 p.m. U.S. Eastern, over WCOM-LP Chapel Hill Carborough, 103.5 FM, and stream over WCOMFM.org. You can stream previous shows from the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/OOTE. Finally, we acknowledge that the town of Carborough, where Out on the Edge originates, was originally part of the indigenous Saponi people's territory, including the Eno, Tutelo, and Shikori nations. So, Judy?
Yes.
Over to you to kick in our conversation with Betsy, and we can bat it back and forth, however
you need. I have a sense, my fellow co-hosts, that we have a partner in crime here, someone who will be able to support our show in many ways. So thank you for coming to introduce us.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here.
Tell us, my first question is, how did you end up where you are now? From wherever you want to start. I know that my connection with you is through the Death Cafe, where we met. So I have a sense that that's an intersection of our lives. How about for the gay, queer community in general?
Okay. Boy, I could write a book about that. How did I end up where I am today? But, I think at some point in my work life, I thought, I've done so many different things. What is my focus? And I realized that really it is educating people in vulnerable populations about taboo health topics, because I just care particularly about people in vulnerable populations because they don't have access to the information that kind of those folks who are more in the mainstream do. And you know, it's just more fun to talk about things that are taboo. It's more fun to talk about things that nobody wants to talk about. So I have done taught peer educators about HIV and taught clinicians about HIV hep C co-infection and worked on worker safety and health and workplace injury and death. So now, you know, this is the most fun. Talk about death and dying.
Somebody's got to do it. Right?
Exactly. Somebody's got to do it, and you might as well make it fun while you're doing it. That's my motto.
Amen.
You know, I like that a lot. You know, and we need that because God knows we all go through dealing with it in parents and friends, right, as well as ourselves at some point. So
that's right. You know, and we might as well be clear about what we want, know what our options are, and have tools and support to put those into place, because mm-hmm. we don't need to add extra suffering, right? There's already enough.
Yeah.
So. But, you know, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of people, no, I shouldn't say a lot of people, I know there's a number of people who don't even want to talk about it. You know, I'm going to live forever is kind of how they behave. And, I'll be blunt and say, I can't say I know all the services you can provide. Are you having any issues with your earphones? What's going on?
I think I'm only hearing you in the room and not through my things.
Okay, let's double check.
Okay.
Let me see what the number is on yours, and we'll follow these. She's in this one. How about that? Somebody talk.
I'm talking. Can you hear?
Oh, yeah, that's a little better.
Can you hear now? Can you hear?
Yeah, yeah.
Here's
that's
now.
Much better.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah, it's just
okay.
Technical difficulties. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's just nothing for
it. It's all part of the fun.
Don't stress about it.
And we can edit things out.
But I was going on and taking some. Sorry. I am kind of curious to hear what are services. Is that kind of.
Yeah, I was going to say that just approaching the subject of death and dying, I probably don't know, but I think I know everything I need to know because I don't know what I don't know, you see. So I need partners in this quest, this.
Yeah.
I'm in the Game of Thrones, you know, at the moment.
Yeah, I guess so. Really, it's like and how would we engage with your organization, you know, how's the payments work? I mean, there's all these questions. I know nothing about what you do.
Excellent. I love it when people say that. So let's start at the beginning. The question about when to engage is early and often. So, you know, my ideal with serious illness care, sometimes called supportive care, often these days called palliative care, but that's kind of on the way out because who knows what palliative care is? Nobody knows what that is. So we're moving toward calling it supportive care or serious illness care because that is much more accurate. Who doesn't need more support when you've been diagnosed with a serious illness or you're dealing with troublesome symptoms? You know, and a lot of times people go to the extreme when they think about it. So I want to encourage everybody out there listening to start early and often. We don't have to wait until we're in agonizing pain. We don't have to wait until we haven't eaten for a month. You can get palliative care if you have a diagnosis of a serious illness and you have bothersome symptoms like you just can't hold down your food like you used to, or the medication that you're taking, because you can get palliative care at the same time you're pursuing curative care. You can be undergoing chemotherapy or getting some other kind of treatment and do palliative care. You can get that extra support to manage pain, to manage, I'm having trouble sleeping, I wake up in the middle of the night, or, you know, there's 25 different. The older we get, the more ways there are to have trouble sleeping, right?
Yeah. And, you know, one question I have, though, is I have nurse friends, and my wife actually dealt with a lot of people dealing with cancer. And I know what you're describing is part of what I saw as her job also. I know she fielded a lot of questions from patients who were in pain, you know, couldn't evacuate for days and days. How would your services complement what I see as the hospital doing the same thing?
It's a both and situation. So palliative care folks, our medical system, and let me just say, if anybody listening has never seen the film Being Mortal, I highly recommend just Googling Being Mortal, stream online free. It's a great film that Atul Gawande wrote, and he really wrote about how our whole medical system is geared toward fixing and curing. And so often palliative care walks alongside folks who have that perspective, but there are extra tools in the toolbox. So a palliative care provider might be doing some of the same things that you were just talking about, but there's a both and aspect to it. Like palliative care folks and hospice providers have some different tools in their toolbox about ways to manage pain or different ways of thinking about, oh, you know, if you're going to take this medication for pain, we're going to make sure that you also take this other medication to avoid constipation, you know, because it happens. Or it doesn't happen.
And those are real practical body, you know, these are real pragmatic body things that people start running into, especially what, like taking high-powered medications, you know, for curative or things. I mean, they can have side effects like what you're talking about, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, there are some different approaches to managing pain as well that just folks in the palliative care system are more, and hospice, more attuned to, let's try, oh, this didn't work. Instead of saying, oh, sorry, we're out of options, say, well, okay, let's try A and B. Let's try B plus C. Let's try mixing these couple of things together.
Interesting.
And, you know, there's often relief available that just didn't come up in the traditional medical system.
Okay. Okay, so early and often. And so you provide mainly medical support, outpatient, inpatient. I have all these questions about. And I think I actually know a guy who works as a spiritual so I think
spiritual
you have
care counselor.
I think you guys have some of these people on staff.
We absolutely do.
So
yeah.
I mean, what
people are often shocked when I talk about how many people we have on staff. We have over 450 people on staff and over 250 volunteers.
That is shocking. And you have residential services too, because I was reading about the organization online.
There is. I'm just going to take this off. There is a inpatient hospice that we have near the, what do they call it, the Lenovo Arena now, basically near the state fairgrounds. We do have a 30-bed patient inpatient facility, but most of the care we provide is actually out in home, whatever people call home. That might be their house, their apartment, their skilled living facility, their assisted living room, independent living. Wherever someone calls home, that's where we provide most of our care.
And is this triangle-wide or just Wake County? Or
it's triangle-wide plus a little bit. So basically we provide care in every county that touches Wake even a tiny bit. And then we're also in Chatham County, and we go out east to Wilson and now Nash counties.
Wow.
So
okay.
We're Durham, well, make me do this online, okay, right? Okay, we're in Durham, Wake, Orange, Chatham, Harnett, Johnston, Nash and Wilson, and I think Franklin. And Granville counties.
That's
so
large.
We travel. Our nurses and our staff build up a lot of miles. And so you mentioned who's on staff. Well, everyone who comes into our hospice program has a whole interdisciplinary team of people who are taking care of them. So there's a doctor or a nurse practitioner on every team. There's a hospice nurse. We collaborate with your primary health care provider. We have a spiritual care provider. We have a social worker. Mm-hmm. There may be a volunteer. So if you're into Reiki, someone might come and do Reiki with you. If you like to have someone play the flute, someone might come play the flute for you or bring a cute little fluffy therapy dog. That's some of the things that our 250 volunteers do.
It's pretty awesome.
So everyone on our hospice care, in our hospice care, has a whole team of people looking out, not just for the person who's receiving care, but also for their family. And in the situation of a queer community, that's family as you define it. So nobody's going to be saying like, oh, well, who's, you know, your legal family based on a certificate or something like that. It's like, tell us how you define your family. Okay, then that is how we see your family. And I think
that's powerful.
That's really important because so many of us have encountered, and I myself have encountered prejudice in the medical system where someone, you know, has said, well, you know, we can't honor your power of attorney because that's mostly for gay men. And, I mean, you know, this was more than 10 years ago, but it made no sense, right? Everybody here, for you, those of you on the radio, you can't see everybody looking at me with quizzical eyes, right. But that's because that makes no sense, right? It makes no sense.
Right.
Yeah. So the medical provider was very uninformed, and I was in the middle of dealing with a crisis, you know, with my then partner, who'd I just flown all the way back to North Carolina from literally across the world in the middle of the night to deal with an emergent situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the last thing I needed right then, but that's what I was dealing with.
Yikes.
So that leads me to my little, we're going to have whole commercial about this, right? But, you know, that I have to say now, that's why it's so important that we in the LGBTQIA2S, you know, in the whole LGBTQ umbrella, we really need to have our paperwork in order.
Yeah, because absolutely.
And when you say paperwork, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking about it is important to have financial documents in order, like a durable power of attorney. That's for financial matters. But what people often do, will they stop there? They'll say, oh, I have my will and I have a durable power of attorney. You know, my son is going to write checks if I can't pay the rent for a month or two. You know, I'm all set. Then I come in and say, well, actually, what I really care about, I mean, I want you to care about those things too, but I'm more concerned about health care wishes and preferences. So I want people to have a living will, which is the document that expresses, here's the kind of care that I want or don't want if I'm no longer able to speak for myself. And I also want to make sure people have a health care power of attorney, the person. Also, because you can have a healthcare power of attorney, the document, that would be called a living will. Here's a list or some notes about things I want and don't want. But we also each want to have an advocate. We want to have somebody who's going to be standing there when we can no longer speak for ourselves, who's going to communicate to the medical team. That person is called, also confusingly, a healthcare power of attorney. So it's a healthcare power of attorney, the person. Also called an agent or a healthcare representative or proxy or surrogate. Those are all the same different words for the same thing. Mm-hmm. Who's going to speak up for me? Who's going to say, Betsy's 97. She doesn't want a colonoscopy. Because even if you find something, she's not going to treat it.
Yeah.
She's 97. She already knows she's had a good life. So, yeah. You know, we want to find somebody who's a bit of a pesky. You know, we don't want to have a healthcare power of attorney who's really a wallflower, who's too scared to speak up. We want to have somebody who's going to speak up when it's needed, and they're going to be able to advocate for us, even if they don't agree with what we want. We want them to be able to say, I wouldn't want to do this, but this is what Betsy wants, so I'm going to fight like hell for her to get what she wants, because that's my job as her surrogate or proxy or power of attorney.
So somebody you trust enough to listen to your desires and who will stand up for that, not for what they would do.
Yes.
Good.
Exactly. Someone who will listen, they'll absorb what it is that you want. They'll be able to translate it into different situations too, because we can't think of everything. Nobody can think of everything.
Right.
So we want to have conversations with them. I'm a parent, and I knew the other day, I thought, my job is done, because my child, who's in her 20s, we heard of someone who was in a medical crisis situation, and she said, Mom, if that ever happened to you, what would you want? And I thought, yes, I have done my job, because she was comfortable enough to ask me, and it just melded into the conversation, which is that's what I want to see as a community educator at Transitions Life Care. I want to see people learn the tools to figure out how to talk to their loved ones.
Do you find that's hard for people? I mean, like people who come to you for services, actually, even, is it hard for them to talk about what they want and what they need?
Absolutely. And what I find is a lot of people have a hard time either starting the conversation, whether it's someone who's their peer or an elder like their parent or a parent saying, oh, my kids don't want to talk about it. But what I've found is once the field is a little warmed up, once people get started, often what they say is, you know, this wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And actually, I feel a little bit better now that we've had this conversation, because I know what Mom wants. You know, in the research, all the data shows us that if people don't know what their loved ones want and something unexpected and horrible happens, rates of depression, suicidality, anxiety, are increased down the road. Whereas even if we have the same unfortunate thing happen, but we know what someone's wishes are, those rates of, you know, mental health issues or problems down the road are so much lower. So this is a gift we can give to our families, and especially as queer people, a gift that we can give to our fellow community members to help normalize the conversation. Hey, I did my advanced directive. What'd you put in yours? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, one of the things when I changed my name a year ago and I mentioned it to our lawyers, they said, okay, we're going to update everything. And so the durable power of attorney, the healthcare power of attorney, everything like that, and my wife is an incredibly fierce advocate for me, as well as my being a fierce advocate for her. So, but I mean, our lawyers just pounced on that, and they've also added a little thing. I don't have the official legal name for it, but anybody listening should probably need to do this. There is now a codicil in my will that I will am not to be misgendered or referred to by my dead name at any point in any sort of memorial service or any, you know, after. The fact that I will die does not mean that I'm going to revert to that person who doesn't legally exist anymore. And my lawyers thought of that and said, we're going to put that in there. Here, sign. Oh, okay, sure. But
there's an additional thing for trans folk that came up in the first death cafe I went to. My husband's trans, and his autonomy, his dignity is in danger if he doesn't have a bulldog on his side to say,
exactly,
you don't get to make fun of my body. Yeah. You do not get to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got her. She's got the armor, and she's got that information, and she's our person to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty important. I don't think a lot of people think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true.
Same thing with letting loved ones into the hospital room. If that's not clearly defined, who has admission, and family comes in and says, no, you can't come in. I mean, that the more of those protections we can get in our documents, the better we can weather those storms that are not over. They didn't all disappear and get resolved in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, my little quippy saying for that is that may we learn all the lessons and never have to use them. May we go through all the scenarios and put down some what ifs and then never have them have to apply. May, you know, can we all go in the way, and by go I mean die, in the way that we want to. Some people want to be asleep. Some people are, you know, the opposite. I want to be totally conscious. Don't even give me pain medication.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all different, and we all define dignity differently. And so one of the great things about I do an advanced care planning workshop, which I would love to. We've talked about doing one here in Orange County, and I would love to do one specifically for the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
Is we play a game called the Go Wish Card Game, which is not legal in basis at all. It's really about what in my heart do I really want? What's important to me? And one of the cards is to maintain my dignity. So. But dignity might look really different to you. I mean, we all might pick different things, you know. I work with someone who, I won't say her name, but I work with someone who says, yeah, I've told my daughter, if you don't pluck my chin hairs when I can't pluck them for myself, I'm going to come back and haunt you. Because that's what dignity is for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to not just think of these things, we get to think of these things and look at our values and figure them out and write them down and communicate them. All those steps are important. Mm-hmm. If I do all that work and then I put a document, get it signed by an attorney and never show it to anybody, and God forbid put it in my safe deposit box, no! You know, then it doesn't do any good.
So what would you recommend doing with that document?
Well, if you fill out a living will, and this is, I'm saying specifically about a living will because it's different for a DNR, do not resuscitate order, or a MOST form, medical orders for scope of treatment. Those are forms that you could create in conjunction with a medical provider. But a living will, it's good to consult with a lawyer to do all of your paperwork, but you don't actually need a lawyer to do an advance directive. There are certain legal requirements. You know, you have to say what you want. You have to have your name. It has to be notarized in North Carolina in front of two witnesses who also signed the document, also in front of the notary. But theoretically, if you have all the required pieces, you could do it on, that on a napkin, as long as you had it notarized in the proper fashion. But what I want, so I'm saying all that about copying because for a living will, I suggest that people make several copies and distribute them freely. You know, maybe not as much as I give out my house key, you know, but...
But what, to your doctor, definitely, if you have one?
You definitely want to bring a copy to your next primary care provider appointment and say, hey, could you please scan this into the medical record? You could do them a favor by having a copy, then they don't have to return it to you. They can just shred it.
Okay.
So
I think that can also be done electronically. I have
absolutely
electronic copies of all of my legal documents, and I have uploaded them onto my chart.
Yes.
So I guess you can do it yourself as part of what you're saying, right? I mean,
you can. Yeah, you can have the document. So your question was what to do with the document. So I'm saying, definitely take it to your provider, have them scan it into your medical record, then it's part of your My Chart record. And you'll also definitely want to give your healthcare proxy a copy. And ideally, you talk to your healthcare proxy before you give them a copy, telling them, you are my healthcare proxy, FYI, and let's have a conversation about what I want. One thing I love about the Go Wish card game is you can... folks can play it together. Let's say, Betty, you're going to be my healthcare proxy, and I'm going to be yours, which is going to work out really well for the first of us to go. The next of us to go is going to have to find somebody else. But we can play the Go Wish card game together. And the first time, I'll play the game and sort the cards the way I would sort them. And you'll pretend you're me. And you'll sort them the way you think I would sort them. And then we get to match up. It's kind of like the newlywed game, but on the other end of life.
Oh, wow.
y'all get that. Not everybody understands what that I'm talking about there. Depends on the age. But, you know, it's a great way to clarify, to know not only I know what I want, but I know that you know what I want because I have seen you show me. And if we had any points of miscommunication or needed clarity, then we could clarify. Oh, I thought you wanted to die in the hospital because you advocated for your aunt to die there. Well, that was me being a good advocate for my aunt. But I actually would like to die at home if I have the option. Or if I still feel like that in that moment. Because we all get to change our mind.
Right. And I can, it makes sense to me that in the middle of a healthcare crisis, you may make very different choices than when you were thinking about it theoretically, right?
I recently went to a conference, the Center to Advance Palliative Care, and I saw one of the best cartoons. These two deer were in the cartoon frame, and one was said to the other, "It's a lot different when you see the headlights." So I definitely have to find and steal that cartoon, but that's true. We can anticipate what we think we're going to want, but we don't know. When we're really in that doorway, things may change. There have been studies that people have said, oh, yeah, if I was in a wheelchair, life would not be worth living. And then after a year of them being in a wheelchair, they did interviews with folks, and they were like, you know what? This is the best quality of life I've ever had.
Fascinating.
They just didn't know beforehand. So that not knowing two things I want to say about that. One is the importance of a good healthcare proxy, because if someone knows your heart, they're likely to be able to know some of those things, or at least more than a stranger off the street. And the other thing I want to say is that we all have our you have a right to revoke an advance directive at any time. And it doesn't have to be a legal process. It could just be saying, you know what, I changed my mind. Disregard all of that. I have a friend whose dad was having a heart attack in the ambulance on the way to the ER, and he revoked his DNR.
So you can do that verbally? Yeah.
He got scared, and yep, you can do that verbally. He said, never mind. And so then, unfortunately, his heart attack progressed, and they did need to do CPR, and he ended up kind of exactly where he didn't want to be. He ended up dying in the ICU on a ventilator. But that, you know, my point is that that was his right.
And at that moment, what he wanted was honored, right?
That's right. Yeah. So when we have our paperwork in order, does that mean we're guaranteed to get what we want? No. For a bunch of different reasons, which you'll have to come to a workshop with me to learn more about all those ones, but because it would take us too long. But, you know, the gist is the more that we can do to state our preferences and make them known, the more likely it is that they will be honored.
Yeah.
It's never guaranteed, though. But if I had to pick one thing that's most important, it's having a well-informed healthcare proxy who you know is going to be around.
Yeah. And then probably a backup, too. Because my wife and I, because we're each other's person, we keep coming up, so what if we're in an accident together? You know, so we need to find other people. We have them in our spheres. We have people who would actually be perfect for it. We haven't really talked to them about that. And this is making me think we should probably do that.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think,
because again, we've done everything together for so long, so much, and it's all solid, and it's really, you know, it's there. But if something, and we're both incapacitated, so
yeah. Well, and like Betsy said, you know, if one of you dies first, you know, you'd have your backup already.
Yeah, and I know exactly, and if she's listening right now, she knows exactly what I'm thinking of, and we just need to talk to them. So.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there is, if someone uses, say, for instance, the five wishes form, which is when properly notarized, it's legally binding in North Carolina, there are four spots in there for a healthcare proxy. So I'm never going to recommend that people, you don't ever want to say, hey, I'm picking all four of my kids in a, you know, majority rule, or I'm picking all four of my friends who live in Portland, California, Maine, and North Carolina to be our co-proxies. Yeah. You don't want to do that. You always want to have a pecking order, but there is room on the form, and there's always room to write in other things.
Sure. I think that's good advice, what you said, to have a pecking order. It's like, number one, that is the person, you know, that, and if they're not available, number two. Not three and four, no negotiating, because you want quick decision making, right?
Exactly. You want clarity. You want to make it easy for the healthcare provider who's having to act. I mean, very often these decisions need to be made quickly.
And I think most of us have heard horror stories about, you know, when it's just left to the family members. It can be a quite tumultuous thing, I would imagine, you know, if there's a lot of disagreement among two, three, four, five kids who are all there.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And that the trauma that results from that doesn't just last a week or a month or a year or a decade even. You know, those kind of things, you know, they live on in families for generations, that kind of story. Of how things went wrong. So this, and by this I mean doing your advanced health care directive, is such a gift that you can give to your loved ones, your family, however you define that. you know, when my mom died, she was always very clear mm-hmm. about the kind of care that she wanted and didn't want. Because I grew up in New Jersey, right in the county next door to where the Karen Ann Quinlan case was unfolding in the news every night.
Wow.
She was
mm-hmm.
a 20-year-old who mixed drugs and alcohol. And because there was no law saying that we should have a say in our health care, her parents were not allowed by the state of New Jersey to withdraw life support for 7 years. So 7 years she laid in a persistent vegetative state because there were no advance directives then. Mm-hmm. So the doctors didn't want to do something because they didn't want to get sued. Now there's the Patient Self-Determination Act of 1990, and there are advance directives which have been a little bit massaged from an apple to an orange. They've a little bit massaged from something that was originally designed to protect medical care providers into a consumer tool. So that's one reason they're not perfect.
Yeah.
But it's what we got, and so mm-hmm. we can use it.
And you can make your needs and your desires very clearly known through that.
That's right. And when you do that, it's not about you. I mean, it's about you and it's not about you. It's about all the people that survive you.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody has to make a tough decision, as I did, as I was the second healthcare proxy for my sister who had Lou Gehrig's disease, and my other sister who was a doctor was the first proxy because she really valued, well, and I didn't know what I knew now.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended that she wanted to be alive. She said, it's worth it to me to be alive as long as I can see the smile on someone's face. So that tells you she wanted to be on a peg mm-hmm. tube when she could no longer eat. She wanted to be on a ventilator. She mm-hmm. lived in a ventilator facility because she couldn't be at home because her husband traveled a lot for work.
Mm-hmm.
That was really hard to support her in that. And then she said, when I can no longer even gesture yes or no, in other words, when I'm completely what they call locked in,
mm-hmm.
can't even move a muscle, not even an eyelash, then I want you to withdraw life support. And that's what we did. And it was really hard, but it was, I can't say it was so much easier, but the fact that she was very clear about what she wanted eased a lot of suffering on our part.
Yeah, probably alleviated. I can see coming away from something like this with a big sense of guilt that I caused the death of my sister. You know, but you did it because she wanted. So, you know, that helps lift that, I would imagine, a lot.
Yeah, I still felt it. And I still had my, you know, crisis and dark night of the soul. But I feel like I passed through it. Mm-hmm. Much more quickly, because we knew.
Yeah.
She had communicated and we listened.
Wow.
Yeah. So sometimes indecision about the right thing to do is incredibly crippling, and just there's trauma involved in that too. And because people hesitate and then any inaction, and it just snowballs. So having a clear directive really, it makes it better for the patient and for the caregivers. Because there's no, what do we do? What do we do? Oh, I, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Tough.
I agree.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes there are situations where a family doesn't agree, and especially in a family involving LGBTQ folks where somebody, legal relationships take precedent over long-established relationships sometimes, like, you know, if there's someone who's a young person and they're in a relationship, but their parents are still involved in their life, you know, they might try, the parents might want to take over the care. And conflict can come from that. But that also is another benefit of working with a team of folks like a Transitions Life Care. We would have this getting the social worker involved, or if it's in a hospital, the palliative care team might get involved. In my own family, which contains an example of pretty much every situation you could think of, with every ethnic group and age group and disease process, when my mom was in a situation that we knew she wouldn't want to be in, because she always told us, my brother said, well, that she didn't say she wanted to be murdered. Ugh. So we had, there were eight kids. One was saying this. All the younger kids had always heard she did not want to be sustained in a situation where she was kind of half full, mm-hmm. where she couldn't have the quality of life that she wanted. We were so lucky because there was a palliative care team at that hospital, and they got the ethics committee involved, and they got us all together around the table, and they got us, we reached a point of agreement. And my mom knew that.
Yeah, so you're answering the question I had in my mind is, how would you deal with this situation at Transitions Life Care? And it sounds like you have teams that would do exactly that. What would folks did with your family?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Let's sit down and talk about this and work through. Like, a lot of times people's knee-jerk, their reactions are based on a knee-jerk reaction or kind of myths that exist in society, like, don't give mom any morphine. Well, if anybody has ever taken oxycodone, we've taken morphine because that's one of the ingredients mm-hmm. in that medication. But you say oxycodone, people are like, great, help her not suffer. But you say morphine, and there's this huge fear, mm-hmm. which isn't based on fact or science, it's based on myths and misunderstandings. Yeah. So mm-hmm. our team helps people clarify some of those, can help people clarify mm-hmm. some of those things. So sometimes it's about relationships, sometimes, you know, messy relationships, because life is life. You take any family dynamics and then yeah. add in end of life, you're going to increase dialing up the intensity, right?
Mm-hmm. And the various paths.
And the various.
I'm sitting here thinking about my son, my grandsons, my husband, my best friends, my agent, all of them. None of them know everything about what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I think my son probably knows least. And that's the one I have to have that conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I want me a deck of those cards.
All right.
Well, and I think the harder thing, though, Judy, is probably going to be to set up time to either talk with them as a group, right, or a few at a time, or one-on-one, because it's a big deal.
Yeah, that's it could be. Ugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to say.
Yeah. Complex and sometimes messy.
Yes, that's exactly
with lots
it.
Of emotion involved.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And, you know, when you're dealing with family, if everybody reverts to age 8, conversations are sometimes more difficult to have. I mean, and that's what a lot of us do when we get yeah. together with our families. Yeah. We're all 8 years old.
Sometimes
no, no
four.
Joke. I know that amazes me. I know exactly what you're talking about. And even at almost 69, yes, I feel like a kid sometimes when I deal with some of the folks in my family, that little kid. So I'm going to ask a nuts and bolts questions. Who pays for this? You know.
Great question. So if we're talking, I'll do the easy one first. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about hospice, almost always it's paid for because someone is either on Medicare. Medicare pays for reimburses for hospice care, Medicare, Medicaid, most private insurance. And at Transitions Life Care, if someone is uninsured, we will still care for them. We do not turn anybody away for lack of ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sometimes cared for people who are unhoused, which brings its own sets of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But we are there to support people who need the care. And that's one reason that we have a large philanthropy department. We're a nonprofit, mm-hmm. but as our CFO, Steve, says at every orientation, just because we're nonprofit doesn't mean we don't need to bring in money because we need to keep the doors open.
Right.
And so that is true. You know, so we're always looking for donations to help support folks who can't pay the bills, or often folks who have children who are ill, seriously ill or dying, they don't get reimbursed. We don't get reimbursed for a lot of the care that we provide them.
For the kids.
For, yeah.
And what a devastating, difficult time for a family to be dealing with a child who may be at end of life.
Right. And it's not just that child. It's the parents and also any other kids.
And siblings,
so we provide all kinds of grief support and anticipatory grief and support for that family. So that's hospice, and that's how Transitions Life Care supports people who need hospice. Palliative care is a little bit different because palliative care or supportive care is a specialist care. So if you broke your leg tomorrow, you'd go to the orthopedist and you'd get your leg set. And I don't know about you, but in my for my insurance, I'd pay a $50 copay for each visit. So palliative care is like that. It's like any other specialist. So you do have to pay a copay.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, in the olden days, provide palliative care in person at people's homes. But since since the COVID pandemic, as you know, that affected a lot of most healthcare facilities in a lot of different ways,
mm-hmm.
and it affected us too. So, and also there have been such increases in the use. People are much more used to telemedicine now. So we provide palliative care through Zoom or through an online secure mm-hmm. medical platform. So somebody can speak to us about their pain management without having to leave their house.
Okay, and then get a prescription.
Yeah.
Probably even delivered if need be, right?
That's right. Yeah. You know, and it's going to depend on the situation.
Right.
You know, so maybe if you may be able to tweak a prescription or, you know, but if someone is in incredible pain, like right now, and they're on palliative care, that we're a partner, remember, with their primary care person. So we might mm-hmm. say, you know what, we think you should call and see if you can get an in-person appointment today. Or sometimes we think you need to go to the ER, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not everything, you know, to everybody all the time
right.
about palliative care. But there are situations where it can be really helpful and avoid an extra visit
mm-hmm.
out of, you know, whole trip out of the house, which, if you've ever been a caregiver, that's a big deal.
Yes.
We've got about 5 minutes left if there's any points we need to make sure we hit before we will wrap up.
What?
I know. Just time flies.
The hour goes by quickly.
Zoom.
Yeah.
I think I answered your question about finances.
I think you did too.
You know, and I'll also say there are some other things, just super quickly, there's some other things that Transitions Life Care does that we haven't talked about. We provide support for people who are caring with someone with dementia. We're a member of what's called the GUIDE program, which is a pilot program of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid. So we have dedicated caregiver support folks on staff, social mm-hmm. workers who can help hook people up with resources. If you're a member of the GUIDE program, if you're a caregiver for someone with dementia, you're eligible to get some respite care through our organization.
Nice. That's like getting someone to come in and stay with the person you're caring for so that you can go take a break out somewhere. And
that's right. It could be to go to the doctor yourself, which mm-hmm. notoriously caregivers don't do as much.
Right.
Could be to go to grocery store. Could be to go to the park and sit on a bench and do nothing for 2 hours and be responsible to nobody for nothing, no way, no how.
Mm-hmm.
And the lovely thing about that is it's a certain chunk of time per year and you get to use it in whatever way you want. So you could say, I'm going to take 4 days and go to my high school reunion. And the GUIDE program would reimburse for care, you know, assuming that you're a member of the GUIDE, you know, that you're enrolled and mm-hmm. part of the program.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is great.
We also have an amazing grief program. If anybody passes away on our service, their family gets support for 13 months.
Wow.
Because, you know.
That's great.
It's not just, you know, we're really good at bringing people minestrone for the or lasagna for the first month after somebody dies. But, you know, grief does not end in 2 weeks or a month when we would like it to.
Right.
Could you quickly give us a contact information for anybody who might be interested in volunteering?
Absolutely, yes. You can, and this also applies for if you think you're eligible for palliative care or someone that you love is eligible for hospice care, you can just call the switchboard, which is 919-828-0890. That's 919-828-0890. Or someone could look at our website, which is www.transitionslifecare.org.
Wonderful.
And there's a way to sign up. You know, both of those are pathways to asking about becoming a volunteer. We'd love to have volunteers. I particularly would love to hear folks from the LGBTQ community who are interested in volunteering.
I know a flute player.
Mm-hmm. All right.
About a minute. 2 minutes.
Okay. And we can.
Yeah. Sure. No.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we Betty, can go.
Thank you very much.
Betsy, you gave us a great amount of wonderful information today. Thank you very much, because God knows we're the elders here, and we need to get this paperwork in place. And it gives me comfort to hear that your organization has these services available for us in the Greater Triangle area. That's pretty amazing. So thank you for the good you do for all of us.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for inviting me here today. And, you know, I feel very lucky to work for this organization because we do amazing work, you know? Yeah. And I hear about it all the time when I'm out in the community, like ordering a coffee at a coffee place. Someone will say, you took care of my mom. You did such an amazing job. Or, you know, and I love that we really want to reach out to everybody. Not just folks who've already heard of hospice, but folks who think, oh, that's for someone else. That's not for me. We're for everybody.
Yeah, well, good. Hopefully people will listen to this program and know it's for them, too. So, again, thank you again. And thanks to WCOM-LP Chapel Hill Carborough at 103.5 FM and to the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging for making Out on the Edge a reality. We also want to thank you out there, our listeners, for joining us today. If you have questions or ideas for future shows, email us at outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. So, to end our program today, in honor of the fact that today is the 2026 Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day here in the United States, here is a quote from Dr. King. One has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws.
Mm. Yes.
From our very powerful civil rights movement in this country that continues today. So. Yeah. Thank you all. Thank you, Betsy. Yeah. And live your love out loud.
my jetpack, the first thing that I do is fly above the gridlock and come to you. I peek into the windows on Fifth Avenue to see how the other side lives. And if I had a jetpack, I would strap it on. I'd get out of this one room and I'd be gone to where there's real houses and big front lawns. If I had a jetpack, I'd take you up with me. At last we'd both be free past the Statue of Liberty in my jetpack. If I had a jetpack, I'd fly above the bridge. I'd wave to all my friends who thought I'd never rise again. I'd fly above the stadium to watch my team win. Watch my team win. And if I had a jetpack, I'd bust into your door. I'd take you by the hand to the Jersey Shore. And underneath the moonlight, you'd want me even more. Cause I'd have a jetpack. I'd take you up so high. If I dropped you, you would die. But I want you by my side in my jetpack.
Aren't you, boy, with your quiet voice and impeccable style? Don't ever let them steal your joy and your gentle ways to keep them from running wild. They can kick dirt in your face, dress you down and tell you that your place is in the middle, when they hate the way you shine. I see you tugging on your shirt, trying to hide inside of it and hide how much it hurts. Let them laugh while they can. Let them spin. Scatter in the wind. I have been to the movies, I've seen hands, and the jokes are mad. You get discouraged, don't you, girl? It's your brother's world for a while longer. You gotta dance with the devil on a river to beat the stream. Call it living the dream. Call it kicking the ladder. They come to kick dirt in your face, to call you weak and then displace you after carrying your baby on your back across the desert.
you don't burn.